The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey everyone, welcome to the program today, Afternoons with Mike on the Shepherd Radio Network. A couple of guests for you. In segment one, we're going to have Sean Spicer, former press secretary for President Trump. And then we're also going to have an interview that I did this past weekend with Lauren Talley. She's a gospel singer, sang for many years with her parents. They traveled under the name The Talleys. And she was at a big 142nd anniversary of First Baptist Church in Oxford. So that's all coming up. And then in segments two and three, Major Hank Harwell with the Salvation Army is going to be with us. So let's get right into my interview with Sean Spicer. On the line right now with Sean Spicer, what an honor for me to get to talk to you. Sean was under President Trump, his press secretary. And Sean, it is great to have you. You've done so many more things than just that. I know most of Americans would recognize you and know you from that. Welcome to my program.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me on.
Sean, you know, when you look back, I know you're on television every night on Newsmax, and so this is something that I'm sure you're asked a lot. How do you typify the nature of our country right now? What would you say is the best descriptor that you would use and to say this is going on in America right now?
I mean, I think overall it's concerning, and I mean, I literally published a book last week called Radicalization, and the point of the book is, when I wrote it, it was more of a warning about where I thought we were headed. And unfortunately, things continue to come true, whether it's this botched withdrawal in Afghanistan. And I mean, there's so many levels to which that's a problem. The rising inflation, the undermining of our top allies, whether it's the UK, South Korea, France. I am very concerned culturally as well about the drift that we're having towards people hating the country, kids being told that they're inherently wrong and bad. And so I'm very concerned about the direction.
I think many people are, and they would share your concerns, especially on the systemic racism accusation that's gone out now, and it's so well documented. Part of what you would know more than just about anybody in America would be the vitriol of the American press right now. You tasted that on a daily basis.
Well, actually, in the book that I just mentioned, Radical Nation, I've got two chapters on the media. And it's interesting. It was very vitriolic under Trump. It was very personal. It was very mean, very intense. Under the Biden administration, it's complicit. They cover up the double standards, the hypocrisy,
right,
the failed policy, and promote him as if they were an extension of the White House press corps. And I mean, I just cite some of the examples. I mean, think about this. Jen Psaki, up until less than a year ago, worked at CNN. You know, these are her colleagues and friends. This is not your traditional. There's no one jumping up and down like a hyena like there was when I was there. There are people who are little scribes for this White House. And frankly, the dirty secret, and there was a story about it yesterday that came out where, you know, she only calls on a handful of people every press conference and then doesn't allow, you know, voices to get heard. So it's amazing, you know, as long as the mainstream media, the Washington Post, the New York Times are getting fed, they don't care about anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you worked daily right next to President Trump, and you mentioned that this was mean-spirited. I would agree with you completely. And this word complicit, that it is almost like the United States news media right now is an arm of the Democratic Party. Is that too strong to say it like that?
Respectfully, I think that's an understatement. Watching them, sort of anytime something goes wrong, it's sort of that they explain why it's not Biden's fault, why this administration shouldn't be held accountable. And it is over and over again. I think that it is an insult for these folks to call themselves journalists because they don't ask the questions. They don't hold this administration accountable. They are truly cheerleaders.
They really are. And, you know, it's hard for me because I'm a member of the media as well.
But I think you made a good point. I host a show every night at 6 o'clock on Newsmax that you mentioned at the top. I'm in the media. I'm not a journalist. I host a show. Mm-hmm. I'm very clear about my bias. And I think that's why it's a great show, because I tell people, here's my background. Here's why I can bring insight to an issue or a perspective. Whereas I think a lot of these other people pretend to be journalists when they are advocates.
Right. There's not an objectivity that's anywhere around from my perspective. Again, complicit is a good word. And it's sad for me. You know, I really wonder now about what it's going to be like. And we know that all presidents, they have a term, and all congressmen have a term. Do you think that the American fabric is going to come through this next term? Without ramifications.
I have been very clear that violence and vandalism are never acceptable means of communicating our displeasure with the government or a political party or a candidate. But I am concerned that there's almost a hardening. You have the president, I note this in the book, you know, he came out day one and said the word unity over and over and over mm-hmm. again, and yet nothing he has done has brought us together. Frankly, it has brought us further apart. You know, they are dismissive when we bring up issues like critical race theory. They are arrogant. And so I think that that's the problem. Here's the thing that's so different between the right and the left. I don't mind. In fact, I encourage the Rachel Maddows of the world and the NPRs, despite their government funding, having the ability to say what they want. I believe as a conservative, a fiscal and social conservative, that the ideas of the right are better for individuals and families and communities and states and countries. The left doesn't want the right to have a voice. They want to cancel you out, censor you. They want to take platforms and organizations like me, like Newsmax, off cable outlets. Think about that for a minute, right? I don't mind. I want to be tolerant of all voices. They, the party that claims to be tolerant, wants to silence, censor, and cancel.
Mm-hmm. That is a strong example of what would appear to be just outright hypocrisy on all of this. And you can't have it both ways. You can't say that you are a person of choice when the only choice that they see as recognizably acceptable is their choice. That's really the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah, they are tolerant as long as it's their position. So.
Mm-hmm.
They are inclusive. Think about this. I live in Virginia. We just elected the first female lieutenant governor of color. And what does the left do? They say that she's actually a racist. You know,
yeah.
You can't be black if you don't support the leftist liberal causes. And Winsome Sears is not only a smart, intelligent woman that's broken a lot of barriers, but she's also a veteran. And they are dismissive of her because she doesn't tout their orthodoxy. And that's the problem. Right there. They
mm-hmm.
they preach tolerance and openness. They frankly, the folks on the left, actually, when I was at the RNC, would mock us for outreach or lack thereof to people of color. And then when we would grow the ranks, whether it's Byron Donalds in Florida, Tim Scott, Mia Love out in Utah at the time, over and over again, Chief James out in Michigan, they would then say, oh, well, those clearly can't be, you know, real blacks because they're conservative. So they mock you for not communicating with people of color. And then when we're successful at growing and diversifying the party, it's, well, that can't be real.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be both.
So tell us about Newsmax, and I know that this is something that has grown. We've only got another minute or so with you here, but Newsmax really, after the election, just shot right up in terms of their viewership and the popularity around the country. What is that like for you to be on every day on that channel?
So it's awesome. You know, when I started at Newsmax, we were growing incrementally every week, not, you know, by a nice, healthy clip that any business would be happy with, you know, 4 or 5% a week. But we were projecting out what it would look like a couple of years from now, and we exploded. We are, you know, now pulling in hundreds of thousands of viewers a night. We are nipping at the heels. In fact, in some cases, beating CNN. On my Twitter handle, at Sean Spicer, I will tweet the ratings, you know, oftentimes, and we're right there. And so it's awesome for me because as a political operative who's, you know, served in the military, worked for 10 different members of Congress and in the White House, I can bring a perspective that no one else can. I mean, I don't pontificate about the decision-making process in the White House. I know it. I don't have to pontificate about what's going on in a campaign. I've done it, you know, at the national level, at the congressional level, at the local level. And so the thing that's fascinating to me is when we talk about the show every day, it's bringing the people who will enlighten us and add to the discussion about whatever the top issues of the day are. And so I love doing what I do. I joke fairly seriously that if I could sign a 10-year contract, I would do it. I love being able to wake up every day, and I have an amazing co-host, Lindsay Keith, and we kind of think about, hey, what are people talking about? What are they going to be talking about at dinner tonight? Mm-hmm. And let's go have that conversation.
Well, you're doing a great job, Sean, and I appreciate it, especially in light of those of us that know what you had to put up with the American media when you were the press secretary should never have been anyone's experience, and yet they did it to you day in and day out and on the weekends, on Saturday Night Live, etc. But I am grateful that you have hung in there and you're doing a good work.
Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on. I hope to continue the discussion.
What an honor it was to have Sean on my program. Next up in this segment, Lauren Talley, a gospel singer that many of you will remember from the days that she sang with the Talleys, a Southern gospel family band, did that for many, many years, really most of her life. And she is now a solo artist. She was in Oxford this past Saturday evening for First Baptist Oxford's big 142nd anniversary. This is Lauren Talley. Here with Lauren Talley at the concert in, I think, about 142 years that this church has been serving this community, bringing the gospel, and it was fun to be a part of this big celebration tonight.
It was a wonderful night, and you think about 142 years is a long time to do anything, but for one church to be a stalwart in the community and continually serve the Lord and bring people in the door. God does things like that.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome thing to be a part of it. And I hope that First Baptist of Oxford has 142 more years.
I do too. I loved it tonight, Lauren, when you asked if there were any charter members here. I thought, now that was really going to be an amazing thing if somebody said yes.
Well, I have to admit, I may have used that joke a time or two before, but it's funny to me. You know, I'm sure there are folks here tonight that, you know, they haven't been here the whole time, but they've been here for a long time. And faithfulness like that and consistency is kind of in short supply in our society anymore these days. And so when you see that, that's a really special thing.
It really is. Growing up as the daughter of the Talleys, traveling around really most of your life, give us just an idea what that was like.
It's very hard to describe if you haven't experienced it. When I was a child, my family, the Talleys, traveled and sang Christian music for my entire childhood, and I would get on the bus with them every weekend and go along with them. My parents did not want to leave me at home with a sitter. They wanted me with them, and I'm very, very grateful to them for that, because it allowed us to spend time together as a family, but it also gave me some unique experiences as a child that I would not have had any other way. I did miss a good amount of school, but my teachers were very gracious to work with me, and I would take homework with me every Friday on the bus and complete it over the weekend and then turn it back in on Monday. And so that I thought that was normal. That it's not a normal childhood, but that seemed normal to me.
Well, you know what? When you think about what kids are going through today, homeschooling, forced homeschooling because of the pandemic and all, but you had functionally that. That's kind of what you were.
I did.
Training, tutoring, and yet at the same time, look at what happened afterwards. You're awarded an honorary doctorate in worship arts. So, I mean,
you have done your homework. No, I went to public school until I was a sophomore in high school, and then we made the switch over to full-time homeschooling. So I've experienced both, and there are definitely advantages to both. Both are good in their own way. And then, you know, there's challenges to both. There's no perfect situation. But everyone is trying to make it work right now as best they can. I'm grateful for both experiences because, you know, it gives you different perspective.
Mm-hmm. It does. Now, you have sung for years, like we said, throughout all of the country. There has to be maybe one favorite or one outstanding moment that you think of. Would you have one that comes to your mind?
People ask that question a lot, and there are many different experiences that, you know, stick out in your mind for one reason or another. I will never forget when our song Hidden Heroes won the Dove Award in 2015. Things like that are always special. But I also remember services that I've been in where people came to know the Lord and God just really moved in a special way. Those kinds of things are the backbone of what I do. The awards and things like that, those are the cherries on top. Mm-hmm. But you can't make that your sole focus. When you stand in front of people every night and you get a glimpse of what they might be going through and you can connect with them on a special level, that's when you think to yourself, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And this is why I'm doing it, is to share Jesus with people. Sharing that message is the crux of it. And there's been a lot of funny things. For example, one night in Ohio, I was getting ready to sit down on a stool and I completely fell off the stool and busted my tail in front of 400 people and fell off the back of the stage. So, you know, you remember things like that. And of course, after everybody went, you know, then a few people laughed and I said, if y'all put that on Facebook or YouTube, I'm coming after you.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, you have highs and you have lows. That's all part of it.
I know people enjoy these Gaither homecoming videos.
Oh, yeah.
And you're on your fair share of those.
That was such a privilege for me as a young kid. I was there because of what my family had done. That's what allowed me in the door, I know. But the veterans of gospel music really took me under their wing and encouraged me. And I learned so much from just being able to sit under them and watch them and talk to them. And looking back now, I was a teenager when we did the majority of those things, teenager in my early 20s. Oh, I wish I had asked more questions. Mm-hmm. 'Cause now I can think of things that I wish I had thought to ask them then, but of course I didn't have enough life experience then to know that. But
well, a big congratulations too on your recent wedding.
Oh, thank you. We're a year into this thing, and I'm so blessed. God's given me a wonderful family, a great husband who supports me and encourages me, and I got 5 stepkids at home who have loved me and accepted me, and I love them. And it's been a big learning curve for sure, because mm-hmm. I didn't have any children before that, and so I'm learning a lot these days. But it's good.
Well, thank you for taking a time here on this night. It was a beautiful concert and a great cause to be together, and you just did a marvelous job.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you so much, and I hope to see everybody in your listenership at a concert very soon. And is it okay if I just go ahead and give a shameless plug?
Yeah.
You can find me online at all of the social media platforms, on the streaming platforms, and at laurentally.com.
I love it. Lauren Talley, thank you for being with me tonight.
Thank you.
What a talented young lady. Lauren Talley, formerly of the Talleys, now a solo artist. And we're going to be back in a moment. Don't go away. Coming up in segments 2 and 3, Major Hank Harwell from the Salvation Army. We'll be back in a minute. On the line with me now is from the Salvation Army, Major Hank Harwell. He works as a Corps officer in the Salvation Army Citrus County Corps. And boy, I tell you, you are with an organization that is much loved, much needed, probably more today than ever. Welcome, Major Harwell.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You know, we are recording this in a season just as the, we're almost in the season of the bell ringers for the Salvation Army. For many, many years, that has been the closest that many people come to any of the members or volunteers with the Salvation Army. This year, are you seeing a return to normal after a very difficult 2020?
I think it's getting a little closer, but I don't know that it's necessarily going to be or ever be exactly the same as it was. I think there's still going to be some things that are going to be new as we go forward, and we'll see how it all plays out.
Well, tell us a little bit about your own background, how you came to know the Lord. What part of the country did you come from?
Well, I actually grew up in Texas. My parents were Salvation Army officers. And when people usually say, whereabouts in Texas, because my parents were Salvation Army officers, we typically were transferred to different locations every 3 to 5 years. And so I literally grew up all over Texas. But I graduated high school in Texarkana and went to did my college work at the University of North Texas in Denton, which is about 45 minutes north of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. My parents are Salvation Army officers, as I mentioned, which means that not only are they responsible for the social services that the Salvation Army provides in various locations, but based on our background and our makeup, my parents were also the leaders of a local Salvation Army congregation. And so for the first, 19, 20 years of my life, my father was the preacher that I sat under and had lots of opportunities to hear the gospel and to respond to that. And I believe that I responded at a fairly early age. But just like a lot of other folks, it's one of those situations where even though you may believe and receive salvation at an early age, you still are working through that, and you still grow up trying to really find out what does that actually mean for me, not just as what my parents have always taught, but what is my relationship with the Lord looking like as I mature, as I grow up. And I really felt like that developed for me while I was in college. And it was there that I received my own calling towards to the ministry within the ranks of the Salvation Army. From there, I attended the Salvation Army's Training College in Atlanta, which covers the southeastern part of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There I met my wife, and together we were commissioned as Salvation Army officers and were sent to serve starting in North Carolina, and then then an appointment in South Carolina, and then back over to Texas for a few years, and then over to Mississippi and up to Virginia, and now down to Florida. So we've been literally all over the Southeast.
So you were called into this while you were, like you said, you were in college, but you were studying radio and television, if I'm right, right?
That's correct. Yeah, my dream was to get into television and film production, particularly. And I had an interest in history, and so I thought maybe I might get interested in doing historical documentaries or some other types of programming like that.
That's so cool.
And so, yeah.
But God's plans kind of trumped all of that.
As they do, as He's willing to do. And it's interesting too. Within the during the time of COVID, I was able to use some of that background and actually producing our worship services for the Salvation Army in Gainesville, where we were at the time. And actually, self-produced a lot of our material up there. Like I said, our worship services. We did a virtual kettle kickoff, and a couple of other events And so, you know, again, I just had that because I had that background. It just made it that much easier for me to put those things together.
Now, when this whole Salvation Army thing came to be in the beginning, how would you say in this day and age, the Salvation Army, I'm just willing to bet that a lot of people who are listening may not realize exactly what a full-time major would do or what the program would be. I think a lot of people's experience, they know that it's a really wonderfully respected charitable organization, but sometime I believe the knowledge might not go much beyond seeing the bell ringers. Give everyone, if you will, kind of a bird's eye view as to what the Salvation Army is doing in 2021.
Well, to do that, I kind of have to go back to the beginning, the establishment of the Salvation Army, and that occurred in 1865 in London. There was a Methodist minister by the name of William Booth who really felt led to reach a particularly impoverished area of London, an area where many of the other churches were not really making much of an impact at all, and just felt like God was calling him to share God's love and to meet their human needs at that time. So the Salvation Army has always had that twin emphasis there, that our mission is to preach the gospel and to meet human needs. And we do that without any kind of discrimination whatsoever. If there is a need, we seek to meet it. We don't dig in too deep and try to say, well, you have to believe the way we believe, or you have to attend our church, or anything like that. It is, if you have a need, we're going to meet it. And we're going to do so because that's what we believe that the love of Christ compels us to do. So everything that we do comes from that simple mission right there of mm-hmm. preaching the gospel and meeting human needs. And one of the things that that William Booth really, really believed was that it's hard to share with people that God loves them until they see that love in action themselves. So that's why we seek to meet those needs, is because we want people to believe that God does love them and does have something wonderful for them. There is a legacy of multi-generational Salvation Army officers. In fact, my wife also is a child of Salvation Army parents, but we're also open to new folks coming in and discovering the Salvation Army and discovering that mission for themselves and bringing their perspectives and their experience and their skills. I believe that God is doing some wonderful things, even in the midst of this disruption that COVID has brought to us.
Mm-hmm. With the responsibilities that you carry as a major, what do you oversee? What would be the purview of your ministry?
Well, here in Citrus County, obviously, the first thing we usually talk about is the spiritual ministry. My wife and I lead the congregation here, where we have services on Sundays, including Sunday school. We have adult fellowship programs that meet throughout the week as well. We also provide, your basic social services. So again, our human needs, where we have a food pantry. We have we provide rent assistance and utility assistance, and if there's a way if there's a need that maybe we've not done in the past, we can try to meet. We certainly will try to do that, or we try to connect you with another agency that is maybe better positioned to meet those needs. Everything that we do during Christmas is geared around again, sharing that gift of God, as well as meeting those needs, so that families can enjoy the season. So when you see the kettle workers with the red kettle and the bell, we do encourage people to give as generously as they can, because those proceeds go to help meet those needs, not just at Christmas time, but really all throughout the year. But we do try to make sure kids have a Merry Christmas, that maybe mom and dad are having to try to decide if they pay their rent or buy their children toys.
Mm-hmm.
There's some hard choices that are having to be made, and we want families to be able to stay in their homes. And so we say, we'll help with the toys. You take care of the day-to-day living. And so we try to do that as well.
Would the kettle, the bell ringers and the kettles, would that have provided a big portion of the Salvation Army's budget, or would that have been a much more project-directed source of income?
No, it's a significant portion of our annual budget. So again, as you know, we basically cover all of the expenses. Or a large part of our expenses at Christmas time is done through not just the kettles, but also other income specifically raised during this year, other donations that we get through the season. And easily a third of our budget comes from what we raise at Christmas.
And what did COVID do to all of that in your area?
Well, this will be my first Christmas in Citrus, but where we saw it especially, and I don't think this area was any different, was that a lot of the locations we were very concerned that we were going to be heavily restricted, that maybe some locations were not going to allow us even to stand because of the general concern of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them did allow us to stand. We did ask that, and we still do ask that all of our, or expect all of our bell ringers to be masked during their shifts. We are offering a touchless giving option where people can scan a QR code at the kettle and donate using their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a major part of what we do, but it is an option, allowing people that, you know, maybe they don't carry the cash anymore in their pockets, like people used to, but they do have their phones, and so many folks will appreciate that option. So we make sure that's available to them as well. But that's been, those are some of the restrictions is, and we are restricted as far as how soon we can start. I think this year we could start a little earlier, but last year we did fairly well, which was very surprising to us, starting after Thanksgiving. And so this year we're doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we just we're going to wait till after Thanksgiving, because I feel like that's important too, is not to rush the season if at all possible. We hope that folks will be as generous or even more so this year than they were last.
Are you seeing in kind of like a change in the ability to recruit the volunteers for these bell ringers?
There's some, yeah. There's still some difficulty in recruiting volunteers. Honestly, the best ways to volunteer for a Salvation Army kettle is with a group. If we had 10, a group of 10 individuals, they could take an hour at a time at a location and essentially cover an entire location for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way to really do that is to, to at least take a day. If you can do that, if you can do more than a day, that's even more helpful. It's hard for volunteers to do it individually. Everybody's busy, and they're really busy at Christmas, and we get that. But if we can get a couple of hours out of 10 people, we've got a day covered, and that is incredibly helpful. And we've got some good, very good locations, and we have some very good volunteer groups who are returning this year, and we're excited to have them as part of our volunteer family.
What would you say is the most exciting memory that you have being a part of the Salvation Army?
Oh, golly. There's been so many different things there. One is the Salvation Army has been, is for us as officers especially, is, does some intentional educational opportunities. And we've had two excellent opportunities to do, one to visit the Holy Land and to take a tour with, you know, to really understand the biblical story that much better. And then the second tour we did was to Greece and Turkey as a part of what we call the Footsteps of Paul,
mm-hmm.
where we retrace the missionary journeys and see some of the early church sites in Asia Minor. And it's just again very humbling when you to consider the whole history of the faith from the earliest days even up to now. And you know, again, as I said, I'm a history fan, so those were very meaningful to me. But I got to say too that it's also the relationships that we make,
mm-hmm.
The friends that we have that are incredibly special. That we look forward to visiting and being with our people as well as along with the friends that we've made along the way.
Oh, that's wonderful. My guest, Major Hank Harwell with the Salvation Army, Citrus County. And we'll be back with him in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. An exciting conversation that I'm having with Major Hank Harwell. Hank is over in the Citrus County area around the Hernando and that whole area covered by our station WRZN 720 AM and 103.5 FM. You know, this area is a just a beautiful, beautiful part of Central Florida. And, you know, you mentioned something in our break that I would love for you to pick up and tell our listeners about. And that would be what would be maybe an unusual thing that happened because of the technology growth in general, how that helped prepare the Salvation Army for the pandemic. Tell us about that.
Well, not just the Salvation Army, but I think our society and our culture in general. I think this is something that's been overlooked in a lot of ways. About 10 years ago, maybe a little more now, I was sitting in a county emergency management briefing, basically saying at the time that we were overdue for a pandemic. I mean, again, this was 10 years ago or better, and so they were encouraging us all to try to figure out, okay, how do we prepare for that? What are some of the things that we need to be considering of? And I don't know that we really ever took that as seriously as we should have. Again, that was, 10 years ago, we never saw anything. Well, then, you know, COVID hit us the end of 19 or and all of 20, and we had to completely rethink a lot of what we did. I don't believe that if we had had the pandemic 10 years ago, as was predicted, that we could have done what we did when it actually mm-hmm. came to pass. I don't believe the technology was there for Zoom for us to be able to connect with people and work offline, from home. Like we were able to for schools to be able to continue educating kids. Again, none of this was perfect, but if this had happened 10 years ago, we would not have been able to do that. We had the opportunity, the technology was there for churches to be able to live stream their services to people who were not able to attend. We're still providing that, even though we've returned to in-person meetings ourselves. But I just think back and say, you know, this was a providential thing that as terrible as the pandemic has been, I believe it was absolutely providential in God's timing that he held it off as long as he did for us to be able to cope.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, that's what I see that. And I'm just, you know, again, floored by the sheer just the timing of everything, of how it all fit into place. Again, I'm not trying to minimize the impact. It's still a very hard thing for a lot of people, and it's still not ideal. But I believe that we were able to cope with it much better because of the growth of technology in that time frame.
You know, and a lot of that came together very quickly because it had to come together. We simply did not have any other options, did we?
Right, exactly. And I think, again, that, you know, just because, and if it happened 10 years ago, I just am not convinced that the technological infrastructure was in place to meet that demand like it was in 2020. You know, I just feel like that was a real case of providential timing.
I agree. Major Hank Harwell is my guest from the Salvation Army, Citrus County. You know, this society in which we live right now, it's becoming increasingly divided. And we know that even it's not a secret that many church organizations around the country have faced a year that they never would have dreamed would have happened in America, maybe another country, but not America, with this political climate, with kind of what has been felt by many leaders, by even governmental officials and law or enforcement agencies, not necessarily as supportive toward ministry-type organizations. What are you seeing happen right now?
Well, we've been able, and I don't know if it's because of our history, of the goodwill that we have been blessed with over the years. We've not run into an awful lot of difficulty here. One of the unique things that we're doing here in Citrus County that a lot of places, a lot of other Salvation Army units aren't involved in is we run a misdemeanor corrections program here that we partner with the county. And basically, you know, nonviolent misdemeanor offenses are usually referred to us to manage their probation. The individuals will check in with us, and we'll help them if there are classes that they need to take. We help coordinate that. We're basically just making sure that that people who make some maybe make some unfortunate and or poor choices have an opportunity to get their lives back on track. That's what we're doing with that, and like I said, we've been blessed that we've not run into a lot of difficulty from the public or governmental agencies interfering with what we do.
Would that be true up in areas like New York or California?
Possibly not. I'm sure there are some difficult waters that have to be navigated there.
Mm-hmm.
This area, you know, in addition to being just a gorgeous place to live, has also been very kind and cooperative with us, and allowed us to do what we do. We stress that. If we're meeting those needs without any discrimination whatsoever. If there is a human need that we can meet, we're going to do what we can to meet it. That's been part of, I think, helpful to us. But again, you know, if anybody wants to know why are we doing this, we can always still point them to the fact that we believe that this is our calling from God, and that we want other people to know Him the way we know Him, and we want to show His love, the love that we've received ourselves. So we look at that as opportunities for that. But you know, if they're not interested, we don't twist somebody's arm. because it's important that, that those needs get met.
When you look at 2021 and now coming to an end, and next year planning is already now underway with all organizations for what hopefully will be an ever increasing face-to-face type of society again, where we have these big events and all of the outreaches are in place. What are the plans for Salvation Army there in Citrus County?
Well, we're hoping to do some expanding. One of the things that we have been doing is we take our mobile canteen, which is like a mobile kitchen, and we're serving meals twice a week to essentially whoever needs a good hot meal in various locations within Citrus County. There's been some desire on the parts of others to try to expand that. And one of the things that's kept us from doing that is just the lack of volunteers. But I think we've gotten a number of folks who have expressed an interest to want to be part of this. And so if that volunteer base grows, then we can certainly look at expanding because there's not a large homeless population in Citrus County, but there are a few, and we want to make sure that they have the opportunity for at least one or two good nutritious meals.
Mm-hmm.
That we can provide, and so we hope to be able to do that. One of the things that COVID affected us with was our youth character building program has had to be suspended because we could not pick up young people and transport them, which is what we normally would do to our youth character building programs. And so because we couldn't transport them, we had to suspend those. So we're hoping that in January that we can start looking at, okay, how do we reintroduce those programs? Because again, that's important to us is, to help young people have some life skills that will serve them in the future, and to help them become good citizens, and just again develop as they should as from young people to adulthood. So those are things that are important to us right now.
You know, I know that every organization loves when young people get the vision and kind of come alongside. Are you seeing that happen right now with some young people maybe who are looking for an avenue to share and serve with their lives and do something good for the people? Are they looking your way right now?
We have a small handful of high school students that are have been helpful to us in through our the feeding program that I was mentioning. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of that is because there's a requirement on the part of high schools and other institutions to encourage volunteerism. But I see with the young people who have been coming that there's a genuine desire to do some good. They may not always be able to identify exactly what that looks like, but we want to be able to help them and point them in the right direction and say, this is how you do good for others and why it's important. And I think they're really seeing the opportunities and the potential that's right before them. And so there's a lot to be excited about there.
That's wonderful. And it's not too late for people at any point in time to become a Salvation Army volunteer. How can they do that? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, certainly can call our Salvation Army. The main office here is 352-513-4960. We would love to be able to discuss the opportunities. What we want to try to do is find out what's also important to them, and try to match those passions that they have with the opportunities that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we think we can just to make it again that much more meaningful and worthwhile to them is to really help them feel like they're making a difference.
Well, I am so grateful to hear that many of the locations that might not have been around last year for the pandemic are going to be opened up, and we'll see those familiar bell ringers out there in 2021 Christmas time. And Thanksgiving and all of that. And we wish all of you the very best. And thank you for your years of service. What a beautiful point to say that you never turned down. It's never discriminated against any group who needs help. And there's a lot of people in this day and age that need that kind of help provided by the Salvation Army. Thank you.
Well, we thank everyone who's been a supporter for us. We could not do the job we do without help from the community.
Well, that's very clear. And you are an organization that has been well-respected for many years, going back to the very beginning. Major Hank Harwell from the Salvation Army in Citrus County. And we have just enjoyed this chat. Wish you the best, sir, and have a Merry Christmas.
And you do the same, and thank you again for the opportunity.
All right. Friends, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.